Hello, beautiful souls, and welcome to the Manifesting Money Podcast.
My name's Anita Aguilar.
I am your host, as well as a money mindset coach, a manifesting expert, and so are you, and I'm going to show you how, and the CEO of a multi-million dollar company teaching manifestation. This podcast's purpose is to bring massive consciousness around the world of money manifestation, and we want to share our stories to truly help you understand that money is just energy. It's an unlimited resource that you can tap into at any given point in time. The way that you feel about money is how it shows up for you. So if you have the limiting belief that you have to work super hard for money, this podcast is for you. I'm going to be sharing the things that I personally learned the hard way, but I'm also going to be sharing tips, tricks, strategies, and stories of those who truly healed their relationships with money and have mastered attracting abundance. Now, without further ado, let's get right to it. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the Manifesting Money Podcast. I am super happy and grateful that you are tuning in today. All of my new listeners, hello. Welcome to our energy. All of our long-term listeners, hello. Welcome back. We just want to give you a quick reminder of how much it helps us when you share and review this podcast. So if you haven't already left a review, again, it helps us so much. And also make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. So if you're somebody who also likes to watch the podcast, we have our last two episodes that are actually going to be on YouTube. So again, your subscription helps us share this message to as many people as we can. So we have an amazing speaker for everyone today. And again, I'm so happy and grateful for this platform and being able to share these stories. What we usually do in the beginning of each episode for all of our new listeners is we share a manifesting money testimony. So again, for those of you who are new, my name is Anita. I'm a money mindset coach. I teach people about the law of attraction, manifestation, aka the way that you feel about money is how it shows up for you. And these are the DMs that I get every single day. So this specific testimony is from Maribel. I believe I shared it on my story the other day, but it was so good. And I wanted to make sure that I shared it on the podcast as well. So here goes. It says, hi, my name is Maribel, and I just finished a 3-day manifesting money workshop. And I do have something to say. I decided to go out on a whim and give it a shot. I went in with an open mind and not expecting much, but also not thinking that it's going to be worthless. And I love this comment because one, she's just pointing out that she's coming in with an open mind, but also not putting all the pressure in the workshop that this needs to change everything. Because it's a reminder that you are the one that causes the shifts, and these are just the tools and the resources to help you do so. So she said, I want to change my mindset with money. Nothing else worked, and I'm really have had it with the relationship that I've had with money. So I went all in and did the journaling and the meditations and purposely thought positive about it. So I set the intention for $2,000 in the beginning of the exercise. I got $2,000 on the 4th day, and that's the day I finished the workshop. I know it was a 3-day, but ADHD happened. Anyway, I was lent the $2,000, which I needed for rent, and then I got the exact amount as a loan from a relative. And she points out that he could have said no, or maybe not even had the money, or even just only let me borrow a certain amount instead of the full amount, but he lent me the full amount. And I've seen that as a manifestation for sure. Not only that, but today I finished the workshop and I got a check in the mail from my 401k for $180, something that I was not expecting at all. So yes, manifesting works. I have so much to learn and ways to go, but I choose to change my perception of money and will never go back to the way that I used to think about it. Thank you, Anita, for opening my eyes to a whole new world. God bless you. With love, Maribel. Aren't these so cute? I love seeing these messages in our DMs and our emails. And I just want to let everyone know that if you are in our energy, whether you're in the Facebook group, social media, please, please, please don't feel like you can never reach out to us. Even if it takes us a minute to get back to the message, I promise you we read every single one and we see your testimonies and we love to share them in our community. So another thing I want to point out about this testimony is that the way that the money manifested and the way that she shifted her perception that, again, things could have happened where this didn't work out. And this is just an example of how money can manifest on demand, especially when you need it for things like rent, when you really set the intention and shift your perception of the way that the money comes to you. Because what happens is that if you're not showing gratitude for that person, again, lending you that money, or maybe you're getting it from a bank, or maybe you're getting on a credit card, everybody always asks, does this count? And the answer is yes, because if you're not showing gratitude to those things, why would Source give you more? So I like to think of it as like, if I give you a gift, and you don't say thank you for it, and you're just like, okay, well, give me more, right? Why would I want to give you another gift if you weren't grateful for the one that I gave you? And so I've seen not only with myself, but a lot of my clients, the reason why the physical money, the random checks in the mail with the $2,000 haven't manifested to that form is because, again, we're not passing the test of the gratitude. So good. I love this testimony. And I'm going to go ahead and get into the introduction of our guest today. So Jaden Vu is somebody who I met on Instagram. We were in each other's energy, and I'm just so happy and grateful that he reached out because I know that this story is really going to connect with all of our listeners. So Jaden Vu is a corporate chef turned e-commerce expert, a serial entrepreneur and investor. He's one of the co-founders of the Launchers Academy, which is an e-commerce training platform based out of Vancouver. So if you're in Canada, make sure you reach out to Jaden. So there's a couple different things I want to point out and bring to the surface before you actually listen to the podcast. So one of the first things that came to the surface when we are interviewing Jaden is his story about how he's a first generation that came here to America, and really hearing how his older siblings, again, have a whole different perception of the world and especially money because they were physically going through that transition of moving here to the States. And even looking at everything that's happening in the world today and really, again, shifting to gratitude, looking outside of your windows right now, whether you're driving, you're working, or you're just at home washing the dishes, listening to this podcast, of how much that we take for granted here in the U.S. So again, that's why I'm so happy and grateful to have this platform to share the stories of those who've not only been through the struggle, but are also breaking these generational curses. Another really interesting part about Jaden's story is about how he went from a dishwasher all the way up to an executive chef without any prior experience. I just love this part of his story because, again, he really talks about how he knew the end result. So even after working really hard and working his way up to this position and then getting into a place where he knew this was no longer serving him and that it was time to release it and start something new, aka his own business. And I see a lot of people that are in this position, right? I've worked so hard to get here. I just can't give this up, right? But they still have this burning desire for more, and they know that they're meant for more. And a lot of times we get stuck in the situation of, oh my gosh, if I'm saying that I want more than what I already have, then that means that I'm not grateful. And that's just a belief. And I believe Jaden's story is a prime example of what happens when you release that and then start to, again, follow your path of least resistance. Last but not least, the struggles of what actually the process of becoming a serial entrepreneur in Jaden's story. Jaden talks about his experience after he made that leap of how he tried to take his own life, not once, not twice, but 5 times. Now, this story specifically really touched my heart, mostly because I lost someone really dear to my heart because of the same scenario. And I just think it's so beautiful and full circle to share the stories of what happens when you shift your perception of yourself. You can tell someone all day long that you love them, that they're doing a good job, right? But if they don't truly believe that and see that from themselves, then nothing's going to change. And so again, Jaden had that shift in himself, and he's seen himself in a different light. And I truly believe that's the key to manifestation, is truly believing that you are worthy of every single thing that is manifesting for you. And that is when the external world starts to shift. So without further ado, let's get to this amazing episode. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the Manifesting Money Podcast. I am super happy and grateful to bring on my guest today for you all. Jaden, I just got done giving you an introduction and what it is that you do. But if you would answer my first question here, which is, how are you doing today?
How am I doing? I am doing okay. Honestly, it could be better. And the reason why I say that is, like most entrepreneurs, everything is all over the place. I feel like I'm ping-ponging my way through. So far I'm good. And being on this podcast is going to allow me to just detach from all the chaos that's happening. So,
oh my gosh, to be honest, I love this answer and it gave me full body chills because, one, I'm just really big on vulnerability. And like a lot of people think, oh, when you get to a certain level, you're not going to have problems anymore or stress anymore. But really it's like, always consciously remembering. And like you just said, being in the now. And so thank you for sharing that, because again, usually whoever's listening to this is listening to it for a specific reason, and they're most likely going through the same process. So awesome. So we love to start with rapid fire. So we're just going to ask a couple quick questions. And good. The first thing that comes to your mind, we'll just get started there.
All right. I'm ready.
Fire away. So the first question is, where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Vietnam. There's a specific area called Da Nang that I'm from. It's more of the, what's the way to put it? It's a lot more privileged area than most. So I was very fortunate growing up.
Wow. Yeah, my assistant over here, Sari, is also from Vietnam.
Oh, nice. Okay, so she must know where the area is. Hello.
I'm like thinking, I always do that with everybody, unconsciously put them in. That's so awesome, though. And I just love the full circleness of it all. And so if there's anybody who's listening to this right now that's from that area, but where are you located right now? I think it was Canada.
Yes, you got it right. Awesome. Your memory served you well. So right now, I'm in Toronto, Ontario.
Nice. Also, again, if someone's listening to this right now and you're also in Toronto, hit Jaden up. Go get some coffee together.
Just don't stalk me.
Yeah, don't stalk him. Next question, rapid fire question is, what is your favorite book?
That is honestly one of the toughest questions. Like, tough questions are like, you know, what is the best business practice or like blah, 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 like more of your intelligent question. But I always get stumped with what's my favorite book. Only reason being is I read 375 books and it's really hard to pinpoint. If I had to say one, my all-time favorite is 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel. And the reason why that is because it's a great, like, friendly book for any starting entrepreneur that really wants to break it into this chaos of an industry, especially when you have no experience. So 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel.
Oh, that is so good. And that just edifies the book 10 times more because of how many books that you read. First off, how do you have the time?
I honestly make time. Like, something that, you know, your audience and you should know there, Anita, books saved my life. The first book I ever picked up was How to Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And I was coming out of a very, very tough time, and books, you know, honestly saved my life. Even the funny thing is, I hated picking up textbooks in high school. I would shy away and I would be one of those kids who just winged it. And if I happened to get a B or A, it was like, I'm over the moon. So.
So beautiful. And I definitely want to bring that back up to the surface about that amazing part of your story and seeing how the education and other people's resources, again, really directed you back to who you really are and the person that you've always meant to become. So this is so beautiful, full circle. My third rapid fire question is, who was your first mentor?
My first mentor? That's a great question. My first mentor, funny enough, had and will always be my culinary teacher. So I had a background in the culinary industry, wanted to be a chef. I was always the oddball in high school. Everyone was, you know, swaying one way, I was swaying the other way. And I found a lot of peace out of cooking, a lot of joy and happiness from just, you know, getting down and dirty, throwing an apron on, chopping vegetables and all that fun stuff. And my first mentor, who no longer is here, you know, rest in peace, was my culinary teacher at the time. Teaching me really just simple fundamentals you never think would bleed into professional life from the kitchen, which is like discipline, grit, and patience. Because to become the best chef, it does take a lot of grit, patience, and discipline.
Wow, full body chills. And what was your mentor's name?
Paul.
Paul. Yeah. Does Paul, are you still in contact with his family at all?
Unfortunately not. I never had a close relationship outside of just our working like student to teacher or student to mentor. But yeah, we just never really got close in that sense. And I wish I had, because it would be nice to know them. But unfortunately, you know, what is a 17, 16 year old kid's going to do? Hey, can I get to know your family? Because it was more like if he brought it up, he brought it up. If he didn't, I just left it at that. But most of our conversation was about dreams of where I wanted to go, where I wanted to work, what kind of restaurants I wanted to open.
So beautiful. Yeah. The reason why I ask is because you never know who's listening, right? And I love bringing those people to the surface. Even on our last podcast episode, it was somebody who was a hairstylist. Like, you know, you never know. A lot of times people are so in this identity of, you know, I'm just a makeup artist. I'm just a chef. I'm just a teacher, right? But their actions and their words, it really clicked when he said it to you. And I really want to point that out. So it's so beautiful. Because now you're that person for so many people. So my last rapid fire question, then we'll get into some good stuff, is what was your first investment in yourself and how much was it?
Love this question. I actually have a really fast answer. It was a $495 program into a gentleman named Grant Cardone, if any of your audience is familiar with him. And I invested into him because I wanted to learn how to sell what it is I was selling at the time a lot better, because I was in a rump. I had a dry spell and I saw this guy on YouTube, and after literally just zombifying myself and just, you know, like a degenerate digging into his YouTube videos all day long, I decided, you know, his program might help me, and it did help me. So, and for me, $495 at that time was a lot of money, especially living paycheck to paycheck.
Ah, I get chills when people say that, because it is, you know, isn't it weird looking back and saying, oh my gosh, that was so much money to me. And now you're probably like, this next investment is like X next level. But I love looking back at those times, right? So beautiful. All right. So the, obviously I want to share your wins, your success, amazing parts of your story. But for us on this podcast, it's really big about, we're really big on telling the story about how everything manifested. So I would like to go back even further before you even knew about law of attraction, manifestation, mindset development, and hear a little bit more about where you grew up. I know that you said you're from Vietnam, and I believe I heard in another interview that your family was the first generation here in the States. Whatever you feel comfortable sharing, we love to hear it on this podcast, because I know there's a lot of people who are in that same position, whether they're that first generation right now, or maybe their parents were.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, if I get emotional, don't make fun of me or judge me, because sometimes when I think back, it does jog a lot of memories. But yeah, my family were immigrants. You know, they wanted a better life for the family of five. So I have an older brother, younger sister. And, you know, they didn't want us to be raised in the economy that they were raised, which was not easy at the time. And my older brother, he lived through it. So we didn't really understood every time he would talk about how hard mother worked or how hard father worked, or, you know, how tough it is, how scary it is to walk outside, and, you know, getting robbed on the streets in broad daylight was normal. Like, we couldn't conceive that. So I'm thankful to my, you know, parents every single day. I'm grateful to be where I am, because if anyone is born or get the opportunity to live in North America, specifically US and Canada, and the other countries are great as well. But, you know, if you're living in the US and Canada right now, you've won the lottery. As Warren Buffett, one of my favorite investors, would say, is you've won the lottery. Right? You have more opportunities than everyone else right now to make something of yourself, given all the resources and materials. So they moved over, and, you know, funny enough, they actually moved to Ontario. So we were out in Ontario, and they gave us a better life. And it was great. But at the same time, I wasn't as grateful in a sense that I hadn't lived through that tough period that my parents went through. So they were spoiling us. And then from there, you know, the whole growing up and just going to school, getting good grades, because we're very traditional, like, household, you know, getting good grades, getting like a great paying job, getting your diploma. Like, they wanted all of us to go into your traditional things that made sense to them, right? Because they don't know what making a lot of money is. They don't know what entrepreneurship is. They just know what stabilization is, which is to find a really good job that pays you well. So for us, you know, the stereotypical is become a doctor, become a lawyer, become a teacher or something like that. Something that you get paid indefinitely every single month on a salary. that was all well for, you know, for the whole entire family, when I slowly realized that I was more the dark horse. I was not as smart as my brother and my sister. They were like geniuses. Like when my brother and my sister, they look at math or they look at any academic, it's like literally Beethoven to music, Mozart to music. It just flowed. For me, I felt like I was looking at the Matrix. I could not understand what makes this, or, you know, why specific science formula worked the way it is. I fell asleep. I was the typical show up to class late, just skip school, had the teachers calling, letting them know that I've been skipping a lot of classes. Like I was your typical, what's the best way to put it? I just didn't care about school. Mm. And because of that, my parents casted me out. And, you know, fast forwarding, I went through, you know, something I want to share with your audience as well, because I know it can help a lot of people. And there's a great chance that, you know, some of the audience member listening might be going through it now or have gone through it. So I kind of want to let them know they're not alone, in the sense that I went through depression, severe depression for 7 years. And when you go through depression, you really have two paths you're going to take. The first path is you're going to let that rock. You're going to let that consume you. You're going to let that really just take over who you are. So you're going to be stuck in that cycle. But the second path is you overcome it. And if you overcome it, here comes a better person, a better character, and really the best version of yourself. So it took me 7 years to go down path two. And because of path two, that's where I manifested the money. And I was like, you know what? I may not be the smartest. I did drop out of high school. My parents did cast me out as like a complete failure to the family, but I'm not going to let that be my future. That can be my current present and my past, but it's not going to be my future. So I decided, you know, I'm going to prove my parents wrong. I'm going to tell my brother and sister through my actions that I am better than them, just to prove, you know, something to myself. And I declared that one day I'll become a millionaire. And then once I became a millionaire and hit that goal, I will become a billionaire. And that's just to prove my parents wrong. It's like, hey, look, you don't have to be the smartest at school to become, you know, successful in life in the future. It's just determination, commitment, and execution is all that matters. You don't have to be the smartest, but you have to be the hungriest. And I was sure hungry. I was a lion every single day, starving for another prey. And that's how it happened.
So good. There's so many gems that I want to go back on. I always have to mute myself during these interviews because I'm literally sitting here like, But the first thing that you said that really stuck with me was that your brother was the oldest and that he did see physically how you all grew up. And I am also a family of five. And so this is why I get excited, because we're operating on the same frequency. Like, you know, you always meet people who are like so in sync. And I wanted to point this out for anybody who's listening right now that is that older sibling, right? And a lot of times, again, we maybe as the youngest or the middle children, we, like you said, you didn't see all of the things that happened. Like your brother mentioning getting robbed on the street, like physically not being safe. And when you said that being in America, North America, was winning the lottery, that gave me full body chills. And I'm so happy that you said that, because one of the biggest questions that we get when it comes to, you know, how do I manifest money? How do I become rich? Is how do I win the lottery? And like your perception on winning the lottery of one, living in a place where you're safe, where you don't have to worry about walking the streets. You don't have to worry about a lot of the things that we're unconscious of, and seeing those things as winning the lottery. Oh my gosh, I got full body chills. And also just hearing your story about how the perception that when you and your family came to America, that it was in order to be successful, you need to be a doctor, you need to be a lawyer. I want to point this out, not only because you took a different path, but also for the people who are listening to this right now, who are still following that, even though it's not their purpose, even though they're still doing it because their parents think, oh, I need to be a lawyer. Oh, I need to be X, Y, and Z. And really shifting that identity. And so you talked about how you went to a deep depression for 7 years.
And again, for anybody who is in this state right now, how would you describe what that depression was? Like, if you could physically say what it felt like, maybe the thoughts that were replaying.
Short answer there, Anita, and thanks for summarizing everything. What it was like going through my depression, it was hell. Every single emotion that you never thought ever existed, it starts to exist. And what I mean by that is the level of self-doubt, the level of humiliation, the level of defeat, agonizing pain, it all hits you, but it's all internal. No one is giving you this, you know, defeat. No one is telling you to feel the way you feel. No one is telling you that you are a failure. It's all self-imposed. And I was going through this rabbit hole for so long. 7 years is a long time. Like, going through depression just for 2 months, that is a long time. Going through it for 7 years, that feels like eternity. And it didn't start really severely. It's kind of like how most depression would, you know, start out. It just starts out small. You kind of have like some doubt here and there. And then the more that it manifests itself, the more you think about it, because here's the truth, right? Just going back to the name of this podcast, you know, manifesting. The power of manifestation is so powerful in a sense that whatever you think, whatever you surround your thoughts are, that will be what's going to be projected externally. And that's what's going to come to you in, you know, big ways or small ways. So for me, I kept having this little small doubt that eventually grew into this big, big, like, you know, part of me that I could not get rid of. And that was the fact that I was an idiot, that I was stupid, that I was never going to make it, that because I kept getting C's and D's and E's and even I's because there were certain electives or classes that would not show up. So I'll get marked an I just for no class attendance. And because of that and how my parents treated me, like, have you ever had that moment where you realize your parents did not care about you without indirectly saying? And I want to paint the picture of what I mean. The moment I realized that my parents did not care about me, and I love my parents to death, and that was a long time ago. So the moment I realized that, it broke me forever. And that moment was when I came home first, and I was a very bad kid growing up. So, you know, trips to the hospital was not, you know, out of the question. It was a normal thing for me. So I came up one day and I was all bloody and stuff like that because I got into a bad scrap, as we call it, right? The lingual. And I was bloody and all that. I walked home and my parents saw me as I was climbing up the ladder, and they saw me and they looked at me, you know, just looked at me, nothing else. And then my brother came out. My brother was just as bad, but the difference is he's very smart. He's like one of those smart, like really tough guys, right? So he came up and he was bruised as well. So he looked like he'd been into a bad fight. He walked up the stairs and here he is behind me and I'm in front of him. My parents see him. Literally, it took less than 1 second for my parents to dart to my brother, brush past me and cuddled him, saying, "Is everything okay?" And I stood there. I was not going to say anything because I didn't know how I was supposed to react. So I left. And at that very moment, I realized that I would never get the love just because I was not up to my parents' standards. Mm. All right. So.
Thank you for sharing the story. I love. And how old do you think you were when this happened?
11. Mm.
This is so beautiful that you're sharing this on this podcast, because again, a lot of people think that one, what you said about how all of the thoughts are internal. I really want to bring that to the surface. Like, nobody's physically saying, you know, you're not good enough. You know, nobody's here saying it, but it's again, that own perception because of these stories that have been built up over and over again. And maybe they've even started from something like, again, a story like you just told, where nobody again physically said anything, but it was the actions. And something that I noticed again with your success story, when you started to talk about when the money did manifest, it was when you were speaking through actions. And a lot of people get stuck with manifesting money, attracting more financial abundance in their life, because they're saying the affirmations and they're, you know, writing it down and they're doing the meditations, but their actions don't align with their affirmations. And so how you're able to identify that story alone is the work. And I want to point this out for anybody who's listening to this right now. You're stuck in the hustle of the grind, which you are going to put in work, you know? But this is the work. And these are the things that most people aren't willing to look at or even talk about. Like the fact that we're talking about this on the podcast is opening it up and giving so many people permission to say, hey, that was my perception of what my parents thought about me in that moment. And that was my perception of the world or success. Like even talking about your story about how you would come home and or how you were messing up in school, X, Y, and Z. Honestly, my perception, my sister told me about this, my nephew the other day. My nephew was like, hey, mom, I don't want to, I kind of want to mess up in school. He's 7 years old. And she was like, why? The old her would have been like, don't mess up in school. You know what I mean? But at this point, she was listening and he was like, I don't know. And so now it just makes, once you're really listening, it makes so much sense. And in my perception, I was like, oh, that means my nephew's going to be an entrepreneur and he's going to be very successful. But again, just being able to go back to those stories and see it is, it's so powerful. So I do want to go into some of the parts where I don't know how much you love sharing these stories, but I'm a big fan of some points in life where the money was super low. You don't know, quote unquote, how you're going to get out of the situation, but you know that you're still going to be a millionaire. You still know you're going to be financially stable. So are there any of those stories that you can look back now and be like, oh my gosh, I had no idea how I was going to get through it, but I did.
Yeah. And I would start, you know, answering by the first thing I did for myself. And I actually picked this up from Jim Carrey, the comedian. He was saying in an interview where he wrote himself a check for $1 million dated for a specific date. Mm-hmm. And that was his accountability, you know, for him to work that much harder to get to that level. And I took that and I wrote a check for myself for $1 million dated a specific date. And I knocked out of the park. So I dated that for, you know, 5 years out. I knocked out of the park in a year. So,
wow.
Yeah. But going back to your original question, how, you know, I kept going through it when I was dead set on becoming a millionaire, even everything was like against me, my back was against the wall. There was no opportunities that I could, you know, foresee, because when you don't understand entrepreneurship, if you haven't been around people that build businesses or made a lot of money, there's not a lot of like leeway for you to be able to see, you know, where to even start. I was around people. One of my favorite saying is you are the five people you surround yourself with, right? And you end up being like them. So I was around five people who didn't make a lot of money, who didn't know how to build businesses, and people that were comfortable making a salary. So, but my conquest to prove my parents wrong, to show off to my brother and sister, has been stronger than ever. And one of my superpowers that I believe everyone here has a superpower. My superpower was perseverance. I cannot give up. Anything you throw at me, I cannot give up. I've made a million, I've lost a million, but I kept coming back. I'm literally like that zombie who clings onto your leg and never let go, because there's no way you're getting rid of me. So I had that innate like trait built into me. So whatever it is I did, because I did door-to-door sales, I sold everything from like $10 products to $1,000 products. I did everything I possibly could to get there. It wasn't so important what I was selling, but what's more important is the lessons I learned. And every millionaire is going to tell you, you can take away all my money today and make me broke and make me go bankrupt. I promise you, either in a year or a few years from now, I will get back to where it is I was, because it's knowledge. It's the skills you acquire. So how I got through all of it was, I didn't really care. I just was not going to give up. You know, whether I was going to open my own restaurant, whether I was going to sell cars, whether I was going to sell insurance, whether I was going to do affiliate marketing, whether I was just going to be a slave for people, did not matter. What mattered was what was in my bank account and whether it was going up or not. That kept me going.
Oh, so good. I love how you talk about the persistence and just keep going, right? I think something I want to point out is that there's two type of people listening to this. There's people who are that already conscious mindset. They're like, I'll do whatever it takes. And again, we are operating at the same frequency and probably the same, what is it called?
wavelength?
Not personality, but it's I can't think of the word. Manifesting generator.
Same mindset, I don't know.
No, I'm trying to think of what it's called, but it'll come back to the surface when it's least important. But then there's people who are listening to this and you say, hey, I'll give you $1 million if you can make an extra $100,000 this year. And they're like, well, how am I going to make $100,000? But people like us are already looking at, okay, how, what am I going to do with $1 million? Right. Because they're focused on the end result and people, I don't know what the percentage is, but a lot of people are focused on how am I going to get $100,000? And they're again, when the end result is $1 million. So I love this about your story, about how your perception of, again,
I'm going to pause you right there.
Yeah, go ahead.
What you're saying right there is so funny because I think it's like almost like deja vu. You bring that up. I actually literally did this little contest about 2 weeks ago. So I was giving a speech here in front of like 60 audience members because we're doing like a Zoom, event. And I was talking to 60 people, and literally what you just said is what I kind of just gave people as like a little challenge. For all those, I'm willing to give you $500,000, but here are the two conditions. Condition one is you get to keep the $500,000 if you can turn it into $250,000 in profit. If you cannot turn into $250,000 profit, you give me $500,000. And no one took the challenge because I was happy to give someone $500,000 and write up a contract. No one took the challenge because just like you said, they don't know how to use that money because the skills and knowledge is not there.
Yes. And it goes back to like, you know, everybody says that they want the money, but then really, again, if something's not manifesting to the physical form, it's mostly because we're scared of having it. It's a lot of self-sabotage. I like using the lottery as an example because again, everybody wants to win the lottery, but then again, at the same time, you know, imagine life with a couple extra $100 million. That would be really cool. But like $500 million, would they know what to do with it? Would they know how to invest it? Would they know, you know, how much to save, what to spend it on? And just like you hear so many stories where, well, no one's really friends with that person because they just want them for their money, you know? And a lot of people are unconscious that they have all these sabotaging beliefs. But again, going back to your story of what you just said, of how you have the mindset, if I did lose it all, I could get it back. No problem. And that's actually one of the biggest sabotaging beliefs that people have about having a lot of money, because like, what if I lose it all? You know, and I think your perception of that is amazing. And it's also what we like to call releases all the resistance. Because again, if you're at peace with that, like, you know, oh no, what if this happens? What if it happens? And then we're so focused on it that it physically starts manifesting. But then when you're like, oh, you know what? I'd be okay if it did. Is when you can start to co-create and think from a place of where you want to be and attract that. So I just want to point this out in your story because it's so interesting. And these stories about, you know, the process of coming up. So I know that you said in a prior video that you started as a dishwasher and you worked your way up to a head chef. So what do you think were the steps that you needed to take to get to that position?
Wow, you did your homework. I love it.
Oh yeah, I've been doing really good at doing my homework too. I'm excited.
This is how you know you are on the same level as a great interviewer. So I appreciate that. Mad respect to you. So yes, I was a dishwasher, had no experience, no formal training of culinary arts per se. The only thing I really had in terms of training was high school. Didn't have the money, nor my parents really wanted to invest into me becoming a chef because once again, they're traditional. So how the journey of me going from, you know, dishwasher to head chef in a very short period of time, because I was a head chef at 21, right? And that's very young being a head chef, very, very young, right? To run like a restaurant for people who invested hundreds and thousands of dollars for a 21-year-old to do that. It is like, you know, a dream. It's a fairy tale. How I got there was, once again, the common trait for everything I do, whether it's I've built my first $1 million company, whether it's I built my third $1 million company, is the same character trait, and success repeats itself, right? Success really repeats itself. It's the hunger. I was just really hungry to prove myself that I was the best chef, that I was the best, you know, I had the best palate, that I knew what I was doing. And obviously I started as a dishwasher because no one's going to hire a kid like me and start, you know, mangling around with their expensive produce and stuff like that. But I eventually worked my way up from all the different roles, like prep cook, line cook. Line cook is where you basically, you are on the line cooking and stuff like that. And then I worked my way up to a mid-tier management position called like a chef de partie, then sous chef. And then literally within a year and a half, I became a head chef of a 40-seat restaurant. And all the way through, that was just determination and hunger. Every day I wake up, I had a military schedule. I was going to manifest where I wanted to go on like this black book. So I actually, you know, for one of the things I do every single morning is I have like five of these black books, but these black books, very small. I write in the three goals I want to accomplish within a year, three goals I want to accomplish within 5 years. And I write them every single morning and every single night as a manifestation. I didn't know at the time that it was considered manifestation. It was just more of a reminder for me because, you know, at a very young age, you don't think in terms of money and manifestation, but I just wanted to be accountable. So every promotion I got, it was literally just kind of like Kobe Bryant. You know, I love Kobe Bryant, the whole Mamba mindset where he's going to be the first one there and the last one to leave. And that was me. Like, I'm going to show you that I can stay in the gym longer and outwork you because I'm that much better. And for me, it was first one to show up chopping, dishwashing, and the last one to close out the line and literally just have that same mentality. And because all the chefs saw it, all the owners saw it, they kept giving me more praises and I got better. But the one difference was I had a very unique palate. I knew how to taste food. I don't really have it anymore. I'm a little rusty, but at the time I was really good in the sense that if you gave me a soup, I can almost tell you about 90% of the ingredients that was in that soup. And people thought that was remarkable. And I knew what paired well with what didn't pair well with what. And a lot of chefs that were classically trained, they were very impressed because you need time and very, very theoretical training to get that. But I knew that, for example, blueberries make sense with lamb. You know, I knew, for example, orange makes sense with duck and et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of people who hasn't been classically trained and start as a dishwasher cannot get that. So it boils down to determination and how hungry you are. That's really it.
Oh, so good. I love how you're talking about how you were able to build that skill set. And again, be hungry. I think this is the number one thing that, again, a lot of people overlook in their qualities. They're like, oh, I didn't go to school. I didn't do X, Y, and Z. And even seeing from the perception that I'm in now where we're starting to hire people for our team, and I'm sure you're like this too, is that you're looking for people like that who are hungry, who are going to do the work. Even if they don't know how to do something, like if they are, again, super fast figuring out X, Y, and Z, it's like, oh, they got it. I'd love your perception on that. Like when you're hiring people, are you looking for that same...
I actually don't even look at resumes, but yeah, exactly. I never look at resumes, even though I have like a, you know, a whole screening process, my HR manager look at it and stuff like that. Even my partners, like we go through like a 4-step interview. I'll be like the last one to kind of review them. And I don't really care about their feedback, what they have to say. I don't care about the resume. It's a vibe thing, right? Skills, all of that can be taught. What can't be taught are two things that I literally grew up with, which is, you know, hunger and determination. You can't teach that to someone. They just have to have it. Mm. So if I don't vibe with you, I can't have a beer with you, nor do I want to take you out for dinner. I ain't working with you.
Chills. I love how you said you can't teach drive and determination. That is so huge. And a lot of people overlook that so much.
Hi friends, I just want to take 60 seconds to remind you that if you are listening to this before Monday, March 14th, you are listening to this for a reason. We are excited to announce that we're going to be hosting a free 4-day Manifesting Money workshop. So if you're somebody who's been tuning into the podcast, you're conscious of law of attraction and manifestation, but you just don't know how to apply it to money, this workshop is for you. We are going to be guiding you through a step-by-step process of how to release your money blocks and truly be abundant. We're not only going to have guest speakers for you all, but we're also going to have giveaways for those who participate in this free workshop. So again, if you're listening to this message before Monday, March 14th, you are listening for a reason. You still have time to sign up for this free workshop, and you can find the link in the show notes. We're so excited to have you there. Now, let's get back to the episode.
And just again, going back to how you're able to build that skill set. A lot of times people are, how you gave that example of like, would you be able to take this money, multiply it? In that webinar that you're talking about, right? A lot of people are scared to even start because they're like, oh, well, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that. But it's a skill set. And so it goes back to your story of how that mindset of like, even if I lost it all, I'd be okay. Because the one thing I didn't lose is the steps that took me to get there. So I know from, even I wanted to go to the part where you have your little black book. This makes me so excited, and how you're unconscious that this is quote unquote manifesting. So if we have any new listeners out there, hello, welcome. This is just your reminder that you're always manifesting. It's been very like brought to the surface as something that you do, like, especially nowadays, everyone's like, are you manifesting? But it's really, again, something that's always happening. And when we talk about manifesting, we say it as deliberately manifesting, aka speaking something into existence. And one thing I want to point out about you writing those goals, the year goal and the 5-year goal, was that you did it the first thing you woke up and when you went to bed. So most people are unconscious that this is a number one or best time to write your goals. And one, seeing it in your handwriting helps prove it to your subconscious mind, because again, it helps program into the brain faster. But also those times, as soon as you wake up, when you first become conscious, is the best time to reprogram your subconscious mind, and same before you go to bed. So I think that's so awesome that you're doing that unconsciously. And I just want to point that out in your story, because look where we're at now. So you're on your path. You became a head chef. And I believe I remember a part in your story where this was no longer serving you. And you're ready to make that leap. So again, if someone's listening to this right now, they're ready to make that leap. This is the stories for you. So how did you first become conscious that this was no longer serving you? Like,
what's honestly, like, it took a while. And this is like for everyone, right? When you get comfortable and complacent, it's good. You know, it feels good. You can depend on that bi-monthly paycheck or that monthly paycheck, because it pays the bills. It allows you to do things. And when you give it all up for things you don't know what's going to happen, that scares the crap out of you, right? Excuse my language here. But it took a while. It was an internal, you know, fight. For some people, it might be longer. For some, it might be shorter. For me, it was really short. And the main driver is literally going back to the main theme of your podcast there, Anita, is money. Money drives all. Money cures all. So I was living paycheck to paycheck, even as a head chef, a sous chef, or whatever, right? And for me, it was not like two things that really drove me to make that step was one, because when you go through like a very dramatic moment, you have a little switch that kind of like just goes on. And then sometimes it goes off. And then sometimes it goes on. Like a lot of switches happened to me, but that like two defining moments that completely just made me want to take a leap of faith is, if you ever had the feeling where before you go on a nice date with a lovely lady or a lovely guy, the first thing you have to do is check your bank account to make sure you have enough to take them to like whatever you're going to take them. If anyone's ever had that feeling, you're not alone, because I had to go through that. If you hadn't gone through that experience, let me tell you, it's not fun. It's embarrassing. So that moment for me, when I realized I could not take that lovely lady out at that time, It was horrifying, right? And I've exhausted all the free stuff you can do, like romantic walks and stuff, like go to the park. Like you had to man up and pay for dinner or something like that, right? So I canceled the date. Couldn't take her. Knew I wasn't good for her. There was probably some better guy who can actually take her to these nice events and stuff like that, pay for a nice meal. That was the first event. Second event was I walked into a very expensive luxury boutique because I wanted to check out these nice bags and stuff like that. For me, I like nice things, even before I had money. And I've never been belittled ever like that in my entire life by this sales rep at that, you know, boutique. And it's okay, you know, he could have been a better representative, but he knew I was not coming from money. And now I appreciate representatives more that take the time to really care about you, regardless if you have money or not. But he was not one of them. So he belittled me. Every question I asked him, he would not even give me a real response because he knew I was not going to buy anything. And at that moment, those two moments combined, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to make so much money. I call it the FU money, that I'm going to buy everything and not give a crap. I don't care about the price tag. I'm just going to swipe it on my credit card because I know I can buy it 10 times over. So that moment made me a switch. And I had, a colleague at the time that was in the kitchen as well. And if anyone ever watched Wolf of Wall Street, there was a specific scene where there was Jonah Hill and Leonardo DiCaprio sitting in the cafe. DiCaprio was there with his briefcase in a nice suit. Jonah Hill walks over. "Don't get it, man. You live in the same building as me. Why do you drive a Jaguar?" If anyone remembers that specific scene, well, Jonah Hill quit his job to go work with DiCaprio. That happened for me. Met up with someone that left the industry entirely, started posting on all his social media, all these nice things, these nice suits, all these cool events. I wanted a piece of that. So I jumped ship, called my owners at the time, called all my team. "Hey, I'm going to drop my knives, hang my towel. I ain't coming back no more." And I got into sales. And even though, the story is supposed to get better, it didn't, because it was tough. I didn't know how to sell. And the kitchen at the time was very toxic. So I didn't know how to control my emotions. And let me tell you this, if anyone is about to get into sales, when you belittle people and tell them they're idiots, you're not going to get a sale. So I talked to people like that. But anyways, fast forwarding, I really just topped it out. And going back to my first investment I ever made, which was that $495 program to help me get sales, things turned around. But it was really that determining factor that I wanted to chase the money. So like one of my models now is follow the money. Just follow the money. Wherever it is, follow the money and you'll get it. And for me, it was either crypto, stocks, or e-commerce and dropshipping. But following the money led me to e-commerce. And that's helped me get to where I am today.
Ah, so good. There's just so many goodies. And I love this that you can speak from experience. Because again, there's a lot of people listening to this right now and they're in that stage where they're paycheck to paycheck or they're going into the stores. I love how you told that story about how someone belittled you. And really, again, being able to be conscious of the people, even in those stores now, who are paying attention to who you are as a person, not what you have in your bank account. And I think that's a lot of times we unconsciously have this belief, I can't go into that store because that experience is going to happen, right? And so one, we don't always know if that's always going to happen, right? And then two is just that I like to say that they are amplifying the feeling that we already feel about ourselves. And so if again, even if you're dressed as different way, there's millionaires and stuff all the time who don't have a lot of money or who don't look like they have a lot of money, right? And this is something that I used to play around with in my mind all the time. It's like, hey, I'm going to go in here and pretend I have a lot of money, right? And then when I realized when I did have the finances in my bank account and I didn't have to pretend anymore, I was like, hey, nothing changed. And again, I love that story that you shared because it happens all the time in society. Like people are unconsciously like projecting their fears on you. Like even when I was looking at my apartment, this guy was like, well, these are our cheapest ones. These are, the ones on this floor are a little bit cheaper. And I was like getting triggered. I was like, why does he keep, is there something about me, that makes it seem like I can't afford this? Is it because I'm a female? Is it because, whatever it is that we're projecting in our head. But once I was very conscious, like, oh, okay, they're just, if it's triggering me, it's still something I need to work on. It's still something where I'm like, oh, I still have that belief about myself. And I just love that part of your story. I do want to touch on one part that I remember last time we had this interview set up and it didn't happen. And I know we talked about this before we got on the podcast, but I wanted to share this for the podcast. So I remember in your story, there's you talk about how this was a point in your life where you were suicidal and you had those thoughts, oh my gosh, I'm a failure. I'm not making any money. And I want to bring this to the surface because my stepdad, he took his own life this past year. And thank you. And, when you're growing up and you hear everybody talking about, we don't have enough money. He was somebody who never showed how much was happening in the background. And when he passed, we learned that he had over $100,000 in taxes that he owed. And it was something that he was battling this whole entire time. And my mom knew, but us kids never knew. And so us even getting on here and sharing this part of the podcast is, it's so, I'm so grateful for it, because if there's people listening to this right now and they're in that position, one, your story is the other side, right? And so I just love to know, again, what were the beliefs that were associated with I'm a failure that led you to that point? And then also, what did you do to help overcome it?
Yeah, first off, I just want to say I'm really, really sorry to hear that. And it's never easy to get over it, because I've lost a lot of few family members to terminal cancer. And it still haunts me, but it gets even worse when you haven't had the chance to really get to spend more time than them. Because one thing we need to understand is money is not important. It's time that it's important. Time is precious. Money comes and go. So, you know, I hope you battle through it. And, you know, I can't say I know from personal experience what it is to go through it, you know, at this current moment. But if there was any word of advice for me, what helped me walk through or go through that period was to think of all the amazing moments I've had with that individual. But going back to your earlier question, yeah, I was very suicidal. I've tried to take my life 5 times. And every time it felt like it was an act of God, because someone stopped me. If no one has stopped me, I wouldn't be here today. And I was only suicidal because it got bigger and bigger to the point where, you know, it was not just a simple thought like you're a failure. It became who I was. I built this imaginary character that no one built for me, that I was going to fail in life, that I was better just ending my life. My parents wouldn't know or even notice a difference. And the people that I called friends, they wouldn't care as much, because I grew up being bullied. I grew up being used. I grew up being manipulated. And anytime someone would talk to me, they needed something. Jaden, go do this. Jaden, can you buy me this? Jaden, I need some help. It was not more like, hey, you want to hang out? Or, hey, look, I have this party. You want to come by? I was just like, hey, you want to come to this party? Awesome. I need you to pick up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 things. So I was just being, you know, used to being used like a mule, like a slave. And I didn't realize that, because I wanted to fit in with the popular. I wanted to be around the nice and cool people and just popping, you know, I wanted to be popping. So that was even worse. So I wanted to end my life. And it came very close every single time I did. But every single time I did, someone stopped me, whether it was my sister, whether it was my mother, whether it was literally the water just didn't kept running because I was trying to drown myself. Like, it was an act of God. What got me out of it was, after you've been literally stopped so many times, it's almost like a sign that someone or something wants you to live and see it to your fullest potential. And I'm not, you know, gonna go completely spiritual or anything, but for me, I'm not a very spiritual guy. Like, I meditate and stuff, but I'm not into it as much as I would love to be, because I know a lot of my millionaire friends that, you know, I talk to, they're all about that. You know, they go to these retreats and stuff like that, to, you know, channel their inner, you know, manifestation and all that. I can't do that. But to kind of wrap it up in saying that, if you are going through suicide or you have attempted, you know, let me just say, one, it's not worth it. And two, you're meant for greater things, whether it's going to be next year, 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, but you're meant for greater things. Like, one of my goals right now, which is going to tie into why, you know, I overcame suicide and why you should not let that overcome you, is one of my goals in life is, once I hit my billionaire status, which is my goal, that's what I manifest every single day, I want to donate half my net worth to create a charity, to create a nonprofit organization that seeks out only the best in people, to find the next Elon Musk, to find the next Albert Einstein, to find the next Oprah Winfrey or whoever it is. But the only difference is those people in different parts of the country that don't have the resources and materials or education that we do have. So I want to be able to do that, because I get excited to find the next shaker, the next mover, the next innovator. Because if we have more Elon Musk, if we have more Albert Einsteins, if we have more really, you know, impactful you know, disruptors, our life will be changed for the better. Like when Uber came, that was life changing. When Tesla came out with electric cars, that was life changing. It's helping the planet and et cetera. So, you know, that's what drives me because I want to find that person. And, you know, you listening right now, that might be you. That might be you. You might be the next Elon Musk. You might be the next Oprah Winfrey. You might be the next Sarah Blakely or whoever it is that you look up to. But you won't know that if you don't fulfill your true potential. And ending your life is, you know, it's not even a permanent solution. It's a temporary solution in a sense that, you know, you really don't want to end your life, but you think it's the safest thing to do because you feel like no one cares. But here's the thing. Someone cares. They just don't know you yet. Someone cares. And whether that's the hotline, whether that's like your friend that you don't open up about. And the one thing I really want, you know, you to listen and also for, you know, for anyone listening specifically to this episode is that if you don't tell anyone, no one will ever know. No one can help you. If you keep it and bottle it in, then no one can help you. And it far too often, a lot of us shy away from being open about it because there are a majority of people who go through this. And it's better to, you know, be together than to be alone. So to kind of summarize it up, how I came out of that is after five times completely failed at trying to end my own life, I said, you know, screw it. I think I have potential. I don't know where that is, whether that's going to be in sales, whether that's going to be creating my own company, whether that's going to be working for someone. I don't know where it's going to take me. But hey, life is a lot fun, more fun, if you just go with it. And for me, going back to it, I would lose to my family if I ended my own life. I would lose to my brother and sister that I so desperately wanted to prove that I was the better of the two or the better of the three. And that hunger saved me, even though all I wanted to do was crawl into the corner and slit my throat. Right. So, yeah, that's how I kind of got it. It's just really the hunger.
Oh, gosh, I just love this topic. And again, thank you so much for being so vulnerable, because I know there's someone listening to this right now. And if you're releasing your emotions, please release your emotions. Again, a lot of times we keep stuff bottled up. And a word that we've been trying to avoid lately is emotional. Because one, a lot of times people are like, no, you're being emotional. But really, it's like you're expressing your emotions. You know, it wouldn't be weird if you walked into a coffee shop and everybody was laughing. So why would it be, is it weird that you're walking in and people are crying, right? You know, it's just so normal. And our mission is to really make that the new norm. And I just love how your story is, again, an example of when people make good money, they do great things. Like a mentor of mine, Chris Harder, says that. And you giving back and really shining light on those people who are, again, those Oprah Winfrey, Sarah Blakely, who are following their path of what we like to call the path of least resistance. It's not what everybody thinks that they should be doing. It's not what their parents think they should be doing. It's the one thing that they are invested in and energized about. And if you want to wake up every single day and tell everybody about how awesome coffee cups are, then do that, you know? And, you know, I love how you're talking about, again, how you were somebody who liked nice things and even before you had the money, is because that's been instilled in us even way before we were born, right? And a lot of times we're seeping into those depressions and our vibration is being lowered is because we have so many thoughts and beliefs and projections that are bringing our vibration down. And a lot of times people say, well, how do I raise my vibration? You know, if I want to make money, I guess I got, or if I want to attract abundance, I have to be at the highest vibration. And everybody always thinks that it's, you know, jumping up and down and celebrating. But really it's just letting go of all the things, the people, the places that are no longer serving you. And going back to what you're saying of that persistence, is that what I've learned throughout this process is that it was always just me shifting whatever it is I was seeking to me seeing about myself. So for example, like you can tell someone all day long, I love you, I want you here. No, don't think those thoughts or whatever it is, right? Like, I care about you, I care about you, I care about you. But if they don't believe that for themselves, then nothing will change, right? If they don't believe that they're doing a good job, like you're doing awesome, you know, then it doesn't matter what anything external says. And so that's why when I go back about my stepfather, that I was like, you know, I told him every single day, I don't get it. And then again, what you just said, you were open, you were receptive, and you understood, oh, that I am whatever it is that I'm looking for. And I truly believe that us finding this path of least resistance and, you know, us being our own cheerleaders and putting that perspective and seeing ourselves in that light of, you know, seeing yourself as Elon Musk, seeing yourself as Oprah Winfrey. I love that you said that, because that's one of my affirmations. I'm the next Oprah Winfrey. I want people to just be able to say, Anita, and here is Anita. So I love that you brought that up. I know we have about, oh, it's 333, my time. And I also love how you said some of your millionaire friends are people who go out and do spiritual retreats. Something I want to point out about you is that you're, again, following your path of least resistance. Like, you know, that's something that they want to do. And if, you know, you're following your path, and that, again, gives other people permission to feel the same. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times we're like, we need to keep up with the Joneses, and it's like, follow your own path, you know? So I think you set a really good example of that. So I do want to start talking about when you got into e-commerce, you started your own business. That's when the money started to manifest. So was there a specific moment when you're like, oh my gosh, I'm making money now?
Yeah, like there was a lot of specific moments, right? But with a lot of like successes comes with a lot of failures, as we all know. And there is really no such thing as like an overnight success when a lot of people think it is. But overnight success is kind of broken down in terms of like all the hard moments, the, you know, the sleepless nights, the long hours, and all the, you know, hair pulling moments, which I've gone through. But the moments for me where I was like, I was making money is really just that first sale. It starts with that first sale, right? To hear that cha-ching, you know, when you hear that, it's you're excited, right? It's your first one. You put in all this work. It's kind of like studying for exam. You put in all this work. You did all the studying, and you literally just timed it to a T, and you made sure there was no room for error. And then when you get that A plus for, you know, or that A from that exam, you just go bananas, right? You just jump up and down. You have your little funny dance, and you're just,
you have a funny dance.
Yeah, exactly, right? You know, you go crazy. You let loose, foot loose, right? That was it for me. It's just getting that first sale after spending all these months putting together a store, finding what products to sell, you know, working on the whole social media aspect, finding a supplier and all that, which is not fun. But then the fun came when the sales came in. So, you know, it wasn't very like a hockey stick kind of. Like my first sale didn't transition to like hundreds and hundreds of sales, right? The first sale kind of just literally went from 1, 2, 3, completely flopped. And it was kind of like going back into the lab and trying to figure out where we went wrong. But that first sale was very significant because it kind of gave you just a little bit like a nibble of like, you know, what you have in store. Because sometimes if you're going through anything you're doing and you're putting in all the work and you don't see results, that motivation is going to run out real quick, and that fuel and to the flame will burn out real quick, and you don't go on anymore. You move on to the other things. But that first sale, like even though it was very, very small in the grand scheme of things, it changed my life because I'm like, it works. This thing works, you know? So with that being said, the first sale, it flopped, and then it just kind of like, it took a few more months to, you know, just do your R&D to kind of like analyze what went wrong and stuff like that. And, you know, get back up on the horse, just keep doing it. And we spent that time to go like, what went wrong? Was it our store? Was it our ads? Was it the product itself? Was it the market timing? And with every failure is like another way to do it more intelligently. One of my favorite quotes is by Henry Ford, is like, failure is an opportunity to do things more intelligently. Right. So with that being said, yeah, we just kind of came back to the lab, worked, tweaked, analyzed, figured something out, made a little difference. And that little difference and all that time, that downtime trying to perfect the next launch, to hone in on the craft, to better our next launch, it took off. And it became 1 sale, 5 sales, 10 sales, 100 sales, 1,000 sales. It got to the point where
like I was frozen. I remember this moment where I was like just frozen because the Shopify notifications, it got so annoying to the point that I had to put my phone on silent, but like the notification, it kept jumping. Shopify, 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 you know, $50, $50, $50, right? And it was going bananas. And I've never seen $250,000 in one day, but let me tell you, it happened. And it was insane. For me, it was just like, Jaden, you did it, buddy. Like everyone that helped me get there, my partners, my assistants, my suppliers, got me there. And I was like, wow, money, it actually exists. You know, money is there. The question is, are you willing to take it? And for me, I took it. And that was the proudest moment in my life. And everything from there kind of snowballed. Because once you have success, it literally just keeps on snowballing, snowballing, snowballing.
Oh, I love it about the snowball too. Because yeah, so many people have this perception, oh my gosh, this is just a one-time thing. But really, it's a snowball, especially like in your story, other people's stories. Like my favorite thing that you said was, it worked. I know exactly what moment you're talking about too. And I'm like, oh, and going back to like, once you have proof to the subconscious mind, oh, this works. Even how you talk about 1, 2, 3, went back to 0. Okay. But I know this worked. So I can still go back and perfect the systems. We were talking about that in our last lunch. We're like, perfecting the systems, and it's so fun. It feels like a game, like an assignment, like what you said. And just hearing that moment of ding 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 ding. So whoever's listening to this right now too, like I want to be very clear that if you're listening to this and you have chills or you're getting emotional, or no, if you're expressing your emotions, it's because it's part of your story. And a lot of people don't realize that, like, oh, that's why my body reacted that way. That's why I got chills. That's why I got goosebumps. That's why I started crying when I heard that. It's because that's how my story manifested too. So again, if you're listening to this right now, please, 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 I know I'm going to say this at the end, but screenshot and tell us if you've had that moment or if you resonate with this, because again, it's manifesting for you. So just a couple last questions and we'll wrap it up here. I want to thank you for your time and energy. My last question for you is, once the money did manifest, did you have any guilt or shame around the money because of, again, your parents worked so hard to get to your X, Y, and Z, or have any of those beliefs of people are just going to want me for my money? Did any of that come to the surface?
That is probably one of the best questions I've been asked in a while. And honestly, no. None of those thoughts ever occurred to me. The first thought that occurred to me is, A, yeah, Jaden, you made it. Second, let's go back to that store and hopefully that rep's still there and show him the FU money. Right? And then the third thing was, how can I grow it more? Right. So what's really important for me was to kind of preserve that money and grow it more. But no, I've never thought like that. It was just more so like I was able to finally do it, that, you know, a guy, a kid who was spending 7 years in depression, tried to end his own life for five numerous times, been told by literally indirectly with his family and everyone around him, he was not going to make it. Like, you know, your typical rags to riches story kind of per se. And I hope no one has to go through it. I had to go through it remotely close. But when you go through that, success is more so being able to just conquer those emotions. The money was not that important. The money was just more like a bonus. Like, it's kind of like a accountability. It's like, yeah, you know, the money attached to what you've gone through, it makes sense now. And yeah, to buy a nice car, to buy nice watches. Like, the funny enough, the first thing I ever bought, you know, for me, that was a luxury, was my Rolex, right? The first thing I ever bought was a Rolex. And I bought that not to show off, but, you know, I collect a lot of watches. So that's kind of like my own little hobby. I collect a lot of watches. And every watch I collect was not to kind of show off that I can afford it, but it has like a sentimental value to it because it's a memory. And if you sat down with me and I showed you all my watches, I can tell you and literally pretty much make a movie out of it, going through all the specific memories I've had and achievements I've had, why I bought this and why I bought that.
So the first thing I bought was that, but it's more so I'm wearing the Rolex and I look back. It's like, hey, look, this is what you had to do. These are the amount of struggles you had to go through in order to get here. And if ever since that, it became like a little hobby for me to collect watches when I accumulate or hit a certain status or, you know, hit a certain milestone. I was very humble about it. I don't know if you, it's funny that I'm bringing that up, but I don't know if you, Anita, you can share with me if you had, but I have this, like the angel and the devil on my right shoulder, my left shoulder. It pops up sometimes, like, you know, especially in moments of success where it's like, what do you do next, Jaden? What do you do next? How are you going to grow it? And when I made that first, sign of success in terms of a dollar value, Angel was like, hey, let's be humble about it. Let's go invest it. Don't go blow it on, you know, cars and, you know, clothes and stuff like that. And the devil's like, hey, kick yourself out. Let's go to that store. Let's rub it in that idiot's face. You know, the guy who belittled you and go like, hey, I'm good now. I have more money than you ever make in your entire lifetime. But I didn't want to go that route because when you go through depression, you realize it's not worth it. It builds a better character. And, I don't want to do what someone did to me because that's not how, you know, that's not what's the way to put it. It doesn't build good character. I didn't want to rub it in his face. You know, it's more subtle. For me, it was just more so because I was so focused on making more money, proving my parents wrong. The next question for me was, how do I grow this to, you know, 500,000, 1,000,000, 10 million, 20 million, 50 million? I was just so focused on that. I didn't really have any other thoughts that could really enter my brain.
Oh, so good. I love hearing these stories. They're like my favorite part of the podcast. And going back to what you said, you asked, for me personally, like I know in the beginning, I was like that in the beginning of my manifestation process, not when money like started to flow like crazy, because money would flow to me, but it wasn't necessarily in my business. It would be random checks in the mail. It would be just crazy stuff would happen because I started shifting on like money loves me. Right. So in the beginning, I was always like, your ego just wants to win just a little bit, but I'm a really big kill them with kindness kind of person. Right. And I love how you said like, not to repeat that same cycle of how somebody treated you. And again, a lot of people don't know that. And I see a lot of, even people here, like where we work at, like you see people, but you see what type of money, you know what I mean? The kind of what you're talking about, the egotistical, you know, I got money than them. It's like, it's not about the money, you know, it's not the energy behind it. The type of money, what are you going to do with that money? Who are you going to help with that money? Right. And I love stories like that because it's just so full circle again. And going back to the watch, you're collecting watches and being able to see those, rewarding yourself. There's a book, it's called Profit First. We talk about this in our academy, but the book talks about how there's million-dollar companies that couldn't pay their own bills or never bought anything nice from themselves because they're like, I need to put everything back in the business. But it's also just like, and they were starving, splurging on everything because they never rewarded themselves for those little wins. And so what we like to call it is a money motivator. So everybody think of your money motivator right now. Mine personally is fancy hotels and trips. Like I'll spend, like when it comes to a t-shirt, I'm like, yeah, you know, $50. And then I'm like a hotel, I'm like $2,000 a night. I'll take two. You know, I'm like such a big experience person. So everybody has their own things too. And that's how I really like to find the balance of like, am I being safe with this money, but also like having that strategy, structure, boundaries, and letting yourself circulate it. You know, that money's coming right back, baby. So good. Awesome. So I just want to leave a little bit of time for you to, again, tell everybody where they can find you. And if they're somebody who is getting into the online space, working with e-commerce is such amazing. I'm so happy that we have a resource for this because we love having experts in this specific field. But if there's somebody who's listening to this right now, they're in that space, they want to know more, where can they find you and how can they work with you?
Yeah, so you can find me on pretty much every single social media platform. So the Instagram, the Talk, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn. If you want to get in contact with me, however, I'm more active on Instagram and TikTok. So you can reach out to me there. I'm very active on those two platforms. And just kind of give your audience, you know, as exactly what it is that I do specifically, so that way they're understanding what kind of line of work I'm in. So, you know, I run a company called Launchers Academy, and what we do is we teach people how to successfully launch and build a Shopify store and find products and run ads. So if any of your audience members is looking for help, I'll be happy and more so willing to get them started in the right way.
So good. Yes, I love this. So yeah, if you're listening to this right now, again, stop what you're doing. Stop driving. I'm just kidding. Don't stop driving. But make sure you make a point, take a screenshot, and send us as fast as you can, because if you put it on the back burner, you're probably not going to do it, to tell us what you got out of this episode. What resonated with you? What made your body physically react? Again, if your body's reacting, it's because it's part of your story and we want to know. And a lot of times people keep like listen to this podcast and then we're like, we don't get any messages. I mean, we do get messages, but I'm like, bro, like, you know, then we follow back people who follow us on Instagram. They're like, I've been listening to your podcast for years. And I'm like, we never knew that you resonated with us. So don't feel like you can't reach out to us. We're here in the DMs. Tag both Jaden and I on Instagram. And yeah, Jaden, I just want to say thank you again for being on the podcast, being super vulnerable. I know the story is going to impact so many people. And again, I'm just so grateful to have had you.
No, I appreciate you, the time you've given me, and also the ability to be able to reach your audience members. And if they got something out of it, which I hope they did, whether it's to stay strong, you know, that you're not alone, or that if you're willing to make that jump, do it. A lot of successful people will tell you there is no success without taking those risks that's needed, whether or not you come out strong. That's not what's important. It's literally being able to have that mindset broken where risks are better than trying to be comfortable. And one of my favorite investors, once again, Warren Buffett always says, you don't grow when you're comfortable. You grow when you're uncomfortable. So I appreciate that. If there's anything else I can do for any of your audience member, they know where to reach out to me. And yeah, it's been a blast. Thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to really get to know me and me getting to know you.
Yes, so good. All righty, loves, we will see you all in the next episode.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into the Manifesting Money podcast. If this episode resonated with you or shifted your paradigm in any way, shape, or form, please stop what you're doing right now and write us a review. This simple act of kindness helps us get this podcast episode out to as many people as we possibly can. And we also want to know what resonated with you and why. So be sure to join our free Facebook group that you can find in the show notes or tag us on Instagram. Either way, we love when you're in our energy and we love rewarding you for listening to the podcast. When you're ready to truly break down your money blocks and learn how to make money work for you, not the other way around, go to the show notes and learn how you can work with us and join our community of people who are making massive shifts in their finances. Thanks again for tuning into this episode, and we cannot wait to share your testimonies. We'll see you in the next episode.